This is Senate Revenue Committee on May 20th, 1985, 1 p.m., Hearing Room A, State Capitol Building. Tape number 189, Side A.
Senate Revenue Committee in order. We have, I believe, some House bills up today for hearing a possible work session. Start with House Bill 2230. Terry, why don't you tell us about 2230?
House Bill 2230 came out of the Interim Revenue Committee as a recommendation. There have been some amendments to on the House side, strictly dealing with just inserting a blank with respect to a sunset date. It deals with electric co-ops. Electric co-ops have in the past paid an in-lieu tax on their transmission and distribution lines of 3% of the gross revenues from the use and operation of those lines. In 1983, the legislative session altered the formula of that in-lieu tax calculation to change it from being 3% of gross to being 4% of net, if you will, the net being their gross revenues minus the cost of power. The rationale at the time for that was the escalation of the power with the BPA power rates from the middle 70s on. At that time in 83, it was put in effect temporarily for just 2 years. This would extend that 4% of gross power minus costs of gross revenues minus cost of power through 1991. It does have a revenue impact. The impact statement is in your books behind the bill. The bill is behind your House bill tab amongst the House bills. It does have a revenue impact. If you don't do anything, what will happen is you automatically go back to the 3% of gross formula. These revenues are in-lieu tax payments. They're distributed to the counties on the basis of wire miles, 25% to the county general fund and 75% to the county school fund. So if you don't do anything, it'll automatically go back to the old formula.
Okay. Richard Cosan.
Good afternoon. I'm Richard Cosan, and I'm representing the Oregon Rural Electric Cooperative Association. And we are very supportive of the bill. It follows House Bill 2957, passed last session. From what we can tell, and from what we've experienced during the course of the last 2 years, the change has been very positive. The Department of Revenue, in charge of the administration of the program, has no problems with the new program in terms of actual administration. It seems to be working well. And I guess unless anybody has any specific questions, that's where I'd like to leave it. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bradbury.
We just go ahead and this.
Okay.
Okay. Can you just walk me through this for a minute so I can understand the numbers that you gave me?
Certainly. On page one, since it's in lieu of property tax, I compared the gross earnings tax paid by electric cooperatives over the course of the last 15 years with property tax levies. And if one were to look at the gross earnings tax, you could come up with an average annual increase somewhere 18% to 19% per year. Property tax levies, on the other hand, increased an average of approximately 9.5% to 10% a year. The reason primarily that has occurred is during the course of the last 5, 6, 7 years, the wholesale rate charged co-ops by and through the Bonneville Power Administration have increased anywhere from 500% to 600% since about the end of 78-79. So that's the first page. Second page,
is simply a breakdown of the actual gross earnings tax paid percent increase and the tax liability represented per account or per individual. And you can see on that second page that in 1975, for example, it was about $9 per individual per year, and that went to almost $25 in 1983. And the third page is a breakdown of the tax liability paid by the 16 electric co-ops that are members. Well, we have 16 electric co-ops that are members of ORECA, and then there's two others in there that serve Oregonians but are located outside the state of Oregon. And the fourth page is basically the cost of power to explain and show the increase over the course of the last 10 years. And then the last page, the graph, is simply a graph delineating the and comparing the property tax levies with the gross earnings tax paid by electric co-ops.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bradbury.
The last page, the solid line is
property tax levies.
Property tax levies. Mr. Chair.
Senator Bradbury.
How does this 4% of gross revenue after subtracting the cost of power, how does that 4% compare to, or do we have any way to compare that to the property tax? If we're paying a property tax rather than
in lieu of
tax, do we have any way to compare that?
We did. We, when I say we, that's kind of loosely. The Department of Revenue sat down last session when we worked on House Bill 2957 and looked at some individual co-ops and began to draw comparisons between what they would be required to pay their tax liability under an ad valorem system mm-hmm. on their distribution transmission lines and the gross earnings tax. And it's basically contingent upon the co-op. On a statewide basis, if you take a look at the co-ops, we have some. Harney Electric, for example, has approximately one consumer per mile of line that they have out there. Salem Electric, a member, basically located in an urban area, has approximately 65 consumers per mile of line. On an ad valorem system, Salem Electric would do better under the ad valorem system. Harney Electric would pay almost twice as much in terms of an ad valorem property tax as they do on a gross earnings tax.
So it just depends on the density of customers and the like.
Miles of line.
Richard, looking at your graph, in terms of the committee, looking at the graph on the, which is the last page of the handout, I think, this graph, I think, clearly shows what happened as a result of the 1983 law change, where you had the dramatic drop. You'd been climbing, you know, much faster, especially in the last few years, than the growth of property tax. You drop back down. Now, again, you're growing again more clearly, or at least a little closer to the relationship with the property tax growth. Additional questions of the committee? Okay, thank you very much. We'll go to work session on this bill.
Move the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hanlon moves House Bill 2230 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cease.
Sorry, I was late. Do we need to do anything with blanks? No. Mm-hmm.
That's taken care of by the House amendments, Senator, which
we just
is
have any blanks.
Page following.
Okay.
Right. Those blanks are filled in. Any other discussion? Call the roll, please.
Senator Bradbury?
Aye.
Cease?
Aye.
Howe?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Riley?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye. Motion carried. Senator Bradbury, would you like to carry this bill?
I'd be happy to, being one of the people who represents a co-op.
I thought that was appropriate. Thank you. We'll go to hearing now on House Bill 2194. And whose bill is that?
Cease.
That is Mr. Peterson's, and we'll be right back with a copy.
Okay, we're at ease. Do you want to go to the next one? Okay, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take the next one first, then. 2550. We'll go to 2550. Well, we're waiting for Mr. Peterson. Terry?
House Bill 2550 deals with a change in the definition of what's included as income under the calculations of the HARP, Homeowner and Renter Relief, Property Tax Refund Benefits. I think it might be most easy for me to explain the bill if I could just refer you to the printed House Bill 2550. It comes to us, by the way, with amendments, but not engrossed. If you'll just look at the bill, the original bill 2550, and if you look in the front, the bottom of the front page, we start to it's the beginning of the definition of income that's used, household income used in HARP. If you'll flip to the second page of the printed bill, you'll look on lines 15 through 17. Notice that included in income are welfare payments. And what this does, what the bill does, and it's really in the amendments, basically create some new language to what you see in that original printed 2550. Basically what it does is that it still continues that welfare payment inclusion in income, but it makes some specific exclusions. Those specific exclusions, and I'll just read them to you, are payments except, or those exclusions are exception for if the welfare recipient receives no direct payment, welfare purchases the services, and the services are in-home care services, including home care, companion, housekeeper, and personal care service. And what you're doing is, and what this bill does, is to exclude from income the value of those purchases. Maybe just to understand how the system works now is that the welfare division, DHR, sends a tape over to the Department of Revenue. And on that tape each year is the information with respect to each of those welfare recipients of what the value is of these services which are purchased by welfare, provided to the service, to the recipient. Though that tape is then cross-checked with the HARP applicants to see that is included as part of their income. And what happens is the Department of Revenue just accepts that information. Welfare is really documenting what is the income with respect to these services. As it came up in the House hearings, mental health services, there isn't a comparable, if the services are for mental health, they aren't included, they don't come over in the tape. And so in the House side discussion, that was one of the arguments that was used to make this change, was it was being done in one place and not being done in another. This would alter the benefits, it would increase the benefits, the HARP benefits, to the recipients of these home care services. The information that we have from DHR is that there are about 2,200 of those. This is included in your impact statement. If this bill is approved, it will be effective for 1 year of the biennium, because it can't get in. The HARP payment's already going out for this October 85, so you affect October 86 and thereafter in terms of HARP payments. So we're talking about a one-year impact here for the biennium. The increase in benefits to those approximately 2,200 people, we think would average about $82 from HARP. That would increase the HARP cost over the biennium about $180,000. Remember, that's a yearly figure, but you're only going to get 1 year's effect in the next biennium.
Okay. Questions of staff?
Okay.
Senator Hanna.
I have a subsequent referral.
No. Don't believe so, Terry.
No.
No subsequent referral. Terry Rogers.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Terry Rogers from Legal Aid in Portland, and I'm representing United Seniors with this bill. Terry Drake's explanation, I think, is quite clear. The person who brought this to our attention was Leona Ramseth, who is 72 years of age. She is She needs nursing home care, but because of the community-based programs that the Senior Services Division runs, she is eligible to receive a homemaker to get the services of a homemaker in her home. She has to be determined to be eligible for these in-home services to actually need nursing home care. If she were in a nursing home, the state would have to add $853 to her Social Security income of $334 a month to keep her in a nursing home. Instead, they pay $240 per month to a homemaker, and it is this service that keeps her out of a nursing home. But because of this, her HARP payment has been lowered since $2,880 was sent over to revenue on the tape from Senior Services saying this is income to her. This income was never, the payments were never made to her. They were made directly by check from the Senior Services Division to the provider. This is basically medical care. The amendments make it clear, medical care, drugs, and medical supplies have never been counted as income by any of the welfare agencies. That wasn't in the law, it simply was codifying practice. The practice was mixed in terms of in-home care, and this would simply say that people receiving these services, when the payment does not go to them, but indeed goes to a provider, this is not to be counted as welfare income. This is what the bill does. It passed the House 55-1, and I would urge your support.
Other questions for Rogers? Thank you very much, Terry. Carl Huska, State Representative.
No.
He is here to visit with us. Welcome this afternoon.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Carl Hostica, State Representative. I'm the chief sponsor of the bill, so I thought I'd just come down and say a word in its favor. I think that probably the strongest item in this bill's favor is the list of sponsors, and we found that was a very persuasive item on the House side, and it appears that it would be just as persuasive on the Senate side, at least as far as the committee's concerned. Besides that, as Terry indicated, the rest of the House did agree it was a good bill, and it does just clear up a very small quirk in the law regarding how things are counted for HARP. We judged on the subsequent referral question that since HARP is usually the province of the Revenue Committee, that the Revenue Committee encompasses the analysis of HARP as well as on the income side, as well as on the expenditure side, so it didn't require a subsequent referral. Also, while I'm here, I was asked to put in a plug for another bill you've got, 2230, which also passed the House unanimously, and we hope the Senate will go along with us on that.
We just passed that one out.
Oh, that one's good. Sure. See, that I didn't even need to come down. You're way ahead of me on these issues.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Are there questions for Representative Plastica? Thank you very much. Well, folks, we can have a work session on this one now. Senator C. Smoos, House Bill 2550 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Are there questions? I'd just like to say that 2550 is a number near and dear to my heart. It was the number of House Bill 2550 was the first ever seatbelt bill in the history of the Oregon legislature, which I sponsored in 1977.
This one had better luck this time.
That one did pass the House. Yes, I agree with you. I hope it has, but it's already gotten farther than that one got.
Would you please note that I've become a supporter of our legislation as a result of your...
I appreciate education. That. I appreciate that. And they said you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Cease.
Aye.
Motion carried. Senator is carrying this one. And
you're going to make me carry the next one, Mr. Chair.
I am. So will the Senator Riles like to carry 2550?
Sure.
Senator Riles will carry 2550. Okay, now Mr. Peterson's here on 2194.
All right. In your books is a copy of the bill and a copy of the revenue impact statement.
This bill basically does four things. The first thing it does is it extends the flat fee schedule for smaller trucks up to 26,000 pounds. And then it provides a number of exemptions from weight mile fees. One is the use of trucks before they're put into commercial use. The other is the use of off-road vehicles that sometimes travel on the highways. And it exempts passenger cars delivering telephone books from paying weight mile fees.
So we become aware of that.
That's
right.
And then there is a sort of a detail that just came to my attention, thanks to John Maris, the Department of Transportation. Just brought to my attention that since you passed out 2266, you modified the flat fee schedule. So if you look on page 5 of the bill, that's the set of flat fee schedules that is being modified to allow the...
We left it out.
It's being modified to allow the trucks up to 26,000 pounds to be on flat fees rather than weight miles. And it extends the schedule. There's kind of a printing error in the bill, so it looks kind of funny. But if you look at Table C, in 18 to 20,000 pounds, the fee is $235. It's printed wrong, but it's supposed to be $235. Now remember, what you did in House Bill 2266 was to raise the gas tax over the next couple of years, and in that bill you adjust this schedule. All right.
Right.
But in 2266, the schedule only goes up to 18,000 pounds. It doesn't go up to 26,000 pounds.
Hmm.
And so the thing I just handed you out was something that John had put together when he noticed this, and that the what you need is an amendment to 2194 to conform it to 2266 for those for the 18 to 26,000 pound category. So that if 2266 becomes law, then these fees that are in 2194 adjust correctly to the new fees that 2266 would impose. All
right. And where's that amendment?
Well, we don't have the amendment because John just thought of this just before the meeting and brought it to my attention. So we'll have to have those drawn up.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, you're going to have to ask Legislative Council which way they want to handle it. Richard?
Well, 2266 is out of the committee already, heading for the floor.
I think we have to do the amendment in this bill.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Yeah. It would have been picked up as a conflict because you're amending a section that you're amending in 2266.
Will they let us do that and pass it out even before we know what the fate of 2266 is?
Well, you can write it up to say if 2266 becomes law, then such and such.
All right. And this would be the schedule over here, this part in the little box on the front page?
Right. You've got two pages. You've got the Table C, the first page of the handout, is for the gasoline-powered vehicles. And then Table D, which is the second page of the handout, that's for the diesel-powered vehicles. And what's in the box would be the fees when the gas tax would be 11 cents, that's the middle column, and then the third column is the fees when the gas tax would be 12 cents.
So is this something that we necessarily need to wait on? It appears to me it's a relatively simple amendment. Simply say that this new fee structure would take place if 2266 becomes law.
I think if you just specify that these are the fees you want in there, then
right.
We can have the amendments drawn up. I don't, unless you want to see them on the way back, you can probably.
Senator Cease moves that we amend, conceptually amend 2194.
Are you in work session or hearing still?
We are now.
Oh, okay.
Senator Cease moves that we conceptually amend 2194. With the fee schedule in the boxes on the handwritten handout that we have with Jerry Maris's name on it, and that those new fees take effect
only if 2266 becomes law. And that we have legislative council draft such amendments and pass them by our staff and by the chair to make sure that they're all right before the bill goes to the floor. Is there discussion of the amendment? Is there any objection to the amendment? Okay. Now we'll go back to hearing, and Mr. Russell.
Which one are we on?
2194.
Oh, we're still on
the
same bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Russell. I'm Deputy Assistant Commissioner for the PUC Motor Carrier Program. Mr. Peterson gave me an excellent description of what this bill does. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions of Mr. Russell? Our staff is so efficient. Thanks, Bob.
Sure.
Senators, back to work session. Senator Cease moves 2194 as amended to be engrossed 2194 as further amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Okay. Senator Howe?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Arnold?
Aye.
Bradbury? Cease?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Motion carried, and I will let Senator Cease carry that one since it came from transportation.
Mr. Chair, can I make an official request?
Senator Cease.
Sometime during the interim, I think it's appropriate that your committee be the one, the revenue committee, be the one to look at the whole flat fee situation because it is a revenue impact thing.
Okay.
Senator Riles, normally we communicate better than this just by eye. I think she understands what I'm saying. We have, after the report by the Department of Transportation and the PUC, it looks to us as if the flat fees aren't in line in some cases one way, in some cases another way, with the cost responsibility and the weight mile situation and all of that. And we need to review it. We've talked about it in relationship to about three bills in the Transportation Committee, but it's really a revenue kind of an issue. And I don't care if it gets done here or if, because I don't know what the situation is with other interim committees, but just to flag that for the record.
Okay, could we ask the staff to note that and put it on the list of things that we want to look at during the interim?
Mr. Chair,
the reason I was frowning was because I
really respect the Transportation Committee for its substantive understanding of the various fairness issues that go into that, and then the relationships to the cost recovery studies and everything else. And sometimes I just feel like that's the appropriate place for those things to be wrestled out, because you need a background and a history of why some things happened here and didn't happen there. I'm not at all disagreeing with the fact of studying it. I just didn't know if this is where the Revenue Committee is really the place. Or some of us that haven't done that.
This session, anyway, there's considerable overlap between the Revenue Committee and the Transportation Committee, like three of us to be exact. So it probably could be appropriately done either place. I've had quite a bit of experience on the Transportation Committee, including this session, and so I don't feel uncomfortable doing that. Since it's a request from the chair of the Transportation Committee, I certainly wouldn't feel uncomfortable with them doing it either.
Mr. Chair, I think
Senator Cease.
Senator Riles feels that she'd rather not do it on the Revenue Committee.
Well, Mr. Chair.
It's good experience.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Riles.
I was not all reflecting on the chairman's ability to handle the bill. I'm sure you could. I guess I was just sort of getting at, on the Water Committee, I'm spending an awful lot of time on fish, so I guess I can spend a lot of time with the Revenue Committee on trucks. But, okay.
Well, staff that's informs it. Me that we're going to be looking at the whole cost responsibility study anyway.
Therefore,
it's an appropriate part of that.
Yeah.
Do we have any leftover business that from last week that we're ready to go on?
You want to table anything?
You know, out of the bills that I have been working on, and I'm not sure about the other bills that you've been working on, so I don't know if you've got things that are left over.
Senator Hammond, I'm supposed to have some amendments coming to deal with the tax base thing. I don't know whether they're ready yet or not.
Yeah, that bill, I think we have scheduled, was it 328 we were going to use for Senator Hammond's amendments?
It's probably a bill that Terry is, a deal with property tax.
We have you.
That's Terry's bill, and I'm not sure.
I think Wednesday we have a vehicle scheduled to deal. We have talked about it, though, and we are taking care of that. Not sure exactly which one it is. Okay, we are adjourned.
Yes, it's efficient.